Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
I want to make a couple of comments about the inflation, deflation, and economic cycle portfolio before we get started with the prepared remarks. First of all, we sold all of our bond proxy positions on Tuesday. Now, we didn't sell the bonds, the treasuries, and the municipal bonds, just the low volatility and utility positions. And the reason is this. Those positions did very well for us over the past year, but became extremely overowned, overbought, and almost became like momentum stocks. They simply no longer worked well when the broader market fell and interest rates dropped. Don't forget, for a long time, as interest rates were falling or if the market was weak, these safe haven assets, low volatility sectors, worked very, very well, utilities and low vol stocks. That stopped working a few days ago and became very expensive. So we dropped them as a hedge. So for the short term, we are now all hostage to the trade talks set for tomorrow and Friday. I still think some shell of an interim deal will get done on Friday. In other words, no new tariffs, but existing ones stay in place. That could, on a very temporary basis, hit gold and boost the broader markets temporarily. But that should give us a great opportunity to reshort the market and buy back our physical gold ETF at a good price. After the skinny deal gets done, investors still have to face a Q3 earnings season that will be horrific and must be reported for the next few weeks, right after this trade deal, if there is one. A sell the news event could be setting up, and the components in the model that I created will tell me if that is indeed correct. A sell the news event, in other words, sell the broader market on this wonderful trade deal, could be setting up. That's my base case scenario. So for the next few days, holding an extraordinarily excess amount of cash is most prudent until we have an official outcome of the trade talks. Again, that's this Friday. Now, my friend, my personal friend, Larry Kudlow, who serves in Trump's cabinet, publicly stated, so this is not something he told me personally, although we do talk, publicly stated that restricting access to Chinese shares were off the table. Okay, so just to set this up, there was a news story from Bloomberg that caused the market to crash, that somehow Chinese shares were going to be restricted in some way, delisted from the New York Stock Exchange or whatever. Then the next day, Trump, Kudlow comes out and says, that's off the table. We're not discussing that. That's not going to happen. And then the very next day, Trump stated that he is discussing the restriction of public retirement funds from buying Chinese stocks. Now, the stock market is getting whipped violently between trade headlines for now. I mean, yesterday we were down almost 400 points. Today, as of this recording, we're up a little bit less than 200 points. You know, there isn't going to be a trade deal on Tuesday. And then China comes out and says, we could be opening up ourselves to a partial deal and the market loves it. And it rallies on that very news. I mean, the algorithms pick that up. So it's not really anything else. That's what's rocketing markets right now. So we will get a great deal of direction on trade very shortly. As I said last week, it's time to poop or get off the pot with this trade. Either we're going to have this trade conflagration run all the way to the elections of next year, or we're going to solve it in a great degree and get it off the table. I think one of those things will happen on Friday. By the way, it should be noted, but let me just back up before I say that. By the way, the reason why I say this is because trade tariffs are supposed to go up on Friday, okay, October 15th, Friday. Trade tariffs are supposed to rise October 15th, and Friday will be the day that they have to decide whether or not that's going to happen, because the delegation leaves to go back to China on Friday. There's only a two-day trade negotiation. So we'll know if negotiations work to some degree and we're going to have all the existing tariffs stay in place, but new ones won't go on, and we'll see how the market reacts with that. Or we just will go ahead and say, you know, Trump stays to his word. Hey, listen, it's an all or nothing situation. And if you're not going to agree to the deal that's best for the United States, we're going to go ahead with the tariffs. The market will crater on that news. So, by the way, it should be noted that Mr. Powell seems to be as good at obfuscating the truth as nearly all of his predecessors. Of course, Paul Volcker being the exception. The Fed has not gone back into quantitative easing because it is now permanently expanding its balance sheet. The Fed is in full denial about it and doesn't want to admit this because its foolishness would be then on full display. After all, going from quantitative tightening back to quantitative easing in just 2 months does show how very little the Fed really knows about the economy or what's going on. Therefore, Powell says this latest round of money printing isn't at all a form of QE, because the Fed is increasing its balance sheet solely because it wants to add liquidity to the repo market. And it's not about pushing down interest rates and pushing up stocks this time around. Therefore, even though the action of printing money and adding to the balance sheet is exactly the same as QE, it is different, or he wants you to believe it's different, because the reason for doing it isn't the same. What? This is like saying an alcoholic is no longer a drunk because he's no longer drinking all day just to get drunk. He's now drinking all day because he heard red wine is good for your heart. So he's really not any longer a drunk. He's really a health nut. Crazy. Okay, let's get to the prepared comments for this podcast. This commentary is going to be known as, "Will rate cuts be enough?" The lamestream or mainstream financial media is absolutely ebullient about global central banks' renewed enthusiasm to cut interest rates even lower than they already are. And most importantly, Wall Street is completely confident that marginally lowered borrowing costs will not only be enough to pull the global economy out of its malaise, but will also be sufficient to provide enough monetary thrust to blow asset bubbles into the thermosphere. However, the truth is, Fed stimulus does not always work. This was the case during both 2008 and 2000. A significant amount of rate cuts was not enough to avert a recession and also did nothing in the way of preventing the stock market from collapsing. During the mid to late 90s, the Fed's 175 basis points of rate cuts helped keep the quote-unquote irrational exuberance then described by Alan Greenspan alive in the equity market and helped propel the NASDAQ to what turned out to be a very dangerous level by the end of the decade. But then reality inevitably came calling, and tech stocks crashed by nearly 80% from March of 2000 through the fall of 2002. That recession and concomitant plunge in stock prices occurred despite the Fed's 550 basis points of rate cuts from 2001 to 2003. Likewise, the Fed's 525 basis points worth of rate cut reductions occurring from 2007 to 2008 was insufficient to check the Great Recession, and the 30% wipeout of home values and half the value of the S&P 500. Fast forward to today, and we see not only has the Fed cut rates by 50 basis points already, but also other central banks around the world have embraced the dovish tone. But again, the question must be asked, will these rate cuts become a panacea for the economy and markets, like they were for a few years during the mid and late 90s? Or will it turn out to be a complete debacle like the last two rate cutting cycles? Wall Street and its shills believe the central bank has omnipotence and omniscience, but history clearly illustrates their fallibility. For a current example, let's look at India. The RBI, the Reserve Bank of India, last Friday cut its benchmark repurchase rate for the fifth consecutive time in 2019. The RBI cut rates by 25 basis points on October 6th to 5.15%, and the government recently enacted a major tax cutting package as well. One would assume that the NSE India Nifty 50 index should be soaring with the amount of fiscal and monetary stimuli thrown at it. However, shares are up just 2.8% since January 2019, yet also down 8% plunge since June. That 2.8% increase for this year is expressed in rupees. The iShares Nifty 50 ETF INDY, which tracks the index in US dollars, is up just 1.6% year to date. Now, India is not yet in a recession, and shares are by no means crashing. I mean, 1.6% in dollar terms isn't exactly a crash at all. But the point is, the massive stimulus already thrown at its market and economy is simply not working at this point. What is clear is that India's stock market is floundering while its rate of GDP growth has plunged to a six-year low. Not only is it true that interest rate cuts don't always work like magic, but it is also a fact that there isn't much more room to lower borrowing costs on a global basis. It normally takes over 500 basis points of rate cuts to eventually stabilize markets. However, now all we have in the U.S. is 175 basis points left to cut before monetary conditions become free. Money becomes free. Now, the ECB and the BOJ are already there. They're already below zero, as a matter of fact. Whether or not rate cuts are effective has to do with debt levels, demographics, the presence of asset bubbles, and the degree in which central banks have the ability to reduce borrowing costs. None of those metrics offer much hope for this current rate cutting cycle. The economies that are over leveraged have insufficient labor force growth, overvalued asset prices, and where central banks are already close to or below the zero bound, turning dovish at that point just isn't very effective. Central banks are short on ammo and cannot easily ameliorate the damaged state of global economies. In fact, the OECD cut its forecast for global growth to just 2.9%. That is the slowest rate of growth since 2009. Turning to the U.S., the ISM survey showed the economy took a sharp turn south in September. Overnight lending in the banking system is still so fragile that the Fed has extended its repo facility until November 4th. The yield curve remains inverted from Fed funds all the way through the 10-year note, which is the most important part of the yield curve, and this has been the case for the past 5 months. And total net new job creation in both the public and private sectors is weakening. The three-month rolling average for total new job creation for September 2019 was just 146,000. That is down from the year-ago level of 189,000. That is a decline of 23%. Things were worse in the private sector, where job growth averaged just 119,000 in the last 3 months, which is down from the 250,000 net new jobs created for all of 2018. S&P 500 earnings are expected to post a negative number for the past three consecutive quarters, and the report for this Q3 earnings season is projected to come in at minus 4.1%, according to FactSet. Meanwhile, the annual fiscal deficit has breached above the $1 trillion level for the first time since 2012, and is projected by the Congressional Budget Office to average $1.2 trillion for each year over the next decade. As bad as that sounds, and it's bad, it assumes interest rates don't normalize. In other words, interest rates can never even come close to mean reverting, and a recession never occurs throughout the next 10 years. Neither scenario is even remotely realistic. My base case scenario is that the current regime of fiscal and monetary policies have become exhausted. This is despite the fact that they have already gone beyond any measure of conventionality or reason. Therefore, in order to boost asset prices higher from the current nosebleed level, central banks will need to move further into the realm of unorthodoxy by deploying massive amounts of helicopter money directly to the public. Unfortunately, that type of lunacy is most likely where the Fed is headed. Having an investment model that tracks such dramatic changes in market dynamics has become and will continue to be 100% mandatory.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.